But you were speaking about how your family felt about you marrying a non-Indian, and I wondered, you know, if that came up for the two of you, and how your husband felt about the whole idea of it.
He never really. He always felt like they either liked him or they didn't, you know. But he was a real, I guess you'd say, a lovable guy. You know, he could charm anybody. First time my mother met him, she just, I don't think, she didn't expect anything like him, I guess. From then on till, just about a year, 2 years ago, when I went back there, and my husband was pretty sick at the time, you know, and she was so worried about him. And she just really took it hard when he died, you know. But he had that way that, I don't know, sometimes it used to kind of make me angry because, like, some of my cousins or my sisters, they're younger than I am. And he would make over them, you know, right away, you know, they would, oh, you know, check this and check that, you know. And I guess it was kind of jealousy, and I thought, they'd kind of take my husband away, so. And he'd always tell me, you know, that, he says, well, after all, they're your relatives, you know. He says, what do you want me to do? Just ignore them. So we didn't have too many problems. And on his side, he has one brother and a couple of sisters, and we got along good with them. And his mother, well, she's real talkative, you know. But I got along with her because, like, we were always taught to respect her. Well, in fact, we have this tradition among my people, I don't know, that daughter-in-law never speaks to her mother-in-law unless she speaks to you. And that's showing respect for her, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So she can say anything she wants to, and you have to just kind of. And that's why I always say, you know, gee, I could hardly wait till I got old enough, you know, to become a senior citizen. Now I can say things, the things that I want to say to my mother-in-law, you know.
How old are you when you got married?
I was 22.
How old was Chuck?
He was 30.
You met your husband.
Mm-hmm.
And you lived in an apartment by yourself while he was still in the Navy?
Well, I lived with two friends of mine that were out there. They were working at the shipyard here in Richmond. And, like, I kept in touch with them. I told them when I was getting out, I was going to stay in San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they told me, because housing shortage was really bad, you know. Everybody seemed like I was out here working in some kind of a defense plant. So, people were renting out their garages, you know. So, she told me I'd have a hard time finding a place. So, she said, well, you might as well moved in with us, and she said, you can share the rent with us.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I did. But I used to go up to Vallejo for maybe two or three nights sometimes when he came in, his ship came in, or I'd come down here or down to San Diego.
Mm-hmm.
That's how we got married down here in Long Beach. It was one of those real fast things because he only had so many hours to leave, you know.
How did you finally make the decision to get married?
I don't know. I've often thought about that. It happened so fast.
But you sound like you had a lot of sense of independence and really wanting to be on your own.
Well, I don't know. I just seem like I thought about it, you know, a lot of times, and I think, and sometimes, you know, like I'd get angry with him about something, and And I'd tell him, you know, well, what did I ever marry you for anyway? He would laugh, you know. He'd say, well, you were just as willing as I was. But I don't know, it just seems kind of, I think we were kind of joking around one time. And I think that what was really in my mind was that I didn't think he meant that when he said he wanted to marry me. And he says, well, come on, let's get married right now. Oh. And I thought, well, he's joking. So I thought, well, I'll go along with it. And I found myself married for sure. And then I thought at the time, too, after I found out we were married, I thought, well, gee, after all these years, I finally got married. But then it didn't seem like we were married because he had to go.
Were you working then?
No, I didn't work for a couple of months. And I just sort of took it easy. And like I said, I had to get used to things again.
Oh, yeah. Back to civilian.
And then I was getting all of $20 a week from this, you know, like the unemployment bureau. They had this special veterans, they used to call it 2052 or something, and for 52 weeks you get $20 a week. And they call it rehabilitation fund or something. So every week I'd drop down there and pick up my little $20. And
did you get anything extra for being overseas?
Oh yeah, we got a bonus. And we got what they call muster out pay for all the months that we were in there.
Mm.
So I got quite a bit, you know. So I had all this in the bank, so I thought I was, you know, I had never had that much money, you know. So to me, just $1,000 seemed like I was a millionaire, you know. And I thought, well, gee, you know, I don't have to work. I could live on this forever. I found out I couldn't. But the first time I thought about going to work was I guess I got tired of just hanging around the apartment, taking in a movie by myself. So I went down there and to the veterans. Well, they have a veterans section down there. So when...
What, now what kind of thing?
In San Francisco.
Oh, in San Francisco.
So I went down there to the unemployment bureau to pick up my little $20. Well, I asked to see one of the counselors. So they assigned me to a counselor, and so I told him, it was a him. I told him that I wanted a job. So he says, well, what kind of experience have you had? Well, I didn't have no experience because I hadn't worked any place that long, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I just told him, I said, the only experience I've had is in the service. He laughed, and then he says, well, what did you do before you went in the service?
Well, he didn't count it. He didn't think the Army was experience. That was a...
Oh, you know, he took it, you know, as experience, but he couldn't really come out, because so many of these companies, you know, what you do in the service, they didn't really think as experience. And then it all depends on what you do.
Uh-huh.
So he wanted to know really what I had done before. So I just told him, I said, I never had a job, you know, too long as I did this and I did that. Going to school, in between, and all that. So, the only qualifications I did have was that I had worked in the hospital before I went in the service, and then I was in the medical corps in the service.
Uh-huh.
So that's the first thing that come up with. Well, how about getting a job in the hospital? And I told him, I said, you know something? I don't know, I thought I would just get away from all that. I don't want to be reminded.
Yeah.
So he started thinking of different things that I might be able to do. He called up several places. I was sent out on, I don't know how many different jobs.
What kind of jobs were they?
I tried everything under the sun, I'm telling you. And none of them lasted because I was beginning to think I was one of those, what they used to call a Section 8 case.
No.
Something must be wrong, I can't speak to.
What kind of things were they?
Oh, you know, I tried everything. Like I even tried working in a sewing factory, being that I'm really good at sewing, you know. Mm-hmm. So I thought, well, this is something I like, you know, so why not make use of it? And I found out the conditions you have to work under.
Oh, yeah.
And pay, and I just couldn't see myself. So I went into about two or three different places. I worked at one for about 6 months. It was a shirt factory. And the reason I stayed there was because it was owned by this man and woman. The woman, she was a Jewish woman. Her parents had been exterminated or something over. And the only reason she escaped the concentration camp was she married Mr. Caruso. He was Austrian, I think, or Hungarian. So she was considered a Hungarian national.
Mm-hmm.
So they let her, because he had come over, he had some brothers or something that lived down here in San Pedro. They were fishermen or something.
Mm-hmm.
Or they raised grapes or something. Anyway, so he came over and then he sent for her.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess they opened up this little business, and it's sort of a, it was a shirt factory. So I went and worked there, and they were real friendly. And like, they used to invite me for dinner, or like some evenings, you know, I'd be in there working, and she'd come in there and she'd say, oh, she said, Vinko and I are going down the street to this restaurant. Would you like to come along? And she'd say, oh, come on, she'd say. So we'd go down there and have a big dinner, you know. And so I hated to just, you know, leave. I really didn't. But she was really nice to me. And he was, too.
So where was Chuck Silverman in this?
Yeah, time? He used to come in. Oh, one time he came in because I was telling him, you know, oh, my husband's going to come in. I said, can I take off early? And he was teasing me. He says, oh, boy. He said, no. She says, Vinko, I said, don't you think? And he says, oh, he said, we'll let everybody off early. He said, bring your man up here. He said, we'd like to meet him. So I took him up there, you know, and they took us out to dinner. They were that type of people, you know. But then it wasn't, I realized I wasn't getting anywhere, you know. So at the time, I think it was one of my uncles passed away or something. So I had that excuse I was going back home. So that's how I quit. And so when I came back, well, I came down here to Los Angeles. And so I wrote them a letter and said I was going to live down here.
Oh, okay.
So I sort of let them down easy. Then I was a cook, too, at the... And that's what was my first job when I came down here. I got this job out there at, it was called a Griffith Park maternity hospital. I guess that hospital's still out there. Los Feliz or something. It's a small hospital. They only handle about 30 patients, all, you know, maternity cases. So they wanted a director in the kitchen. I had to make out all the menus and all the, order all the supplies, and I had to keep track of all this budget and all that, you know. And so I lasted there for about 2 months, I think. And then I was on the go again. It was like that. I tried this and then something, you know, would come up that I didn't like about it, so.
Well, do you feel like maybe that being in the service might have had something to do with that, just not being able to find exactly what you want to do because of
nothing was seemed satisfactory. I think it was the security of the army. I knew that there was always a bed for me to sleep in.
Yeah.
It was always near. And then the friends that I had, you know. And
how were you feeling in this time? Were you feeling lonely? Did you have friends that you saw, or were you pretty much by yourself?
No, I made a lot of friends that I, but I don't know. I never did really. I guess I never did really make close friends where, you know, like you live in a place and then you have your neighbor. It wasn't that kind of a.
Mm-hmm.
It was just because I lived in apartments and a couple times in motels, and people were just coming and going, you know. Mm-hmm. So you'd make friends with somebody. Maybe about a month later, they were moving out, or mm-hmm. I was moving out.
Was it because of the war, just everyone in transition?
Yeah, it was. And like guys were just getting out of service, mm-hmm. and they were looking for jobs. They were looking for things, you know, where to settle down. Mm-hmm. And then so many of the friends that I met, you know, like their husbands were in the service, and like we live in these apartment houses. And all of a sudden they'd come and say, oh, you know, we're going to be moving into our own home, you know, so-and-so bought a GI home.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to think, you know, gee, why couldn't we buy one, you know? Then I thought, you know, but I don't want to stay in California. If we buy a home, I want it back, you know, where I come from. If that was another dream I had, that I was going back. And the years went by, and I'm still in California.
Well, when did Chuck finally get out of the Navy? When did you?
Well, he got out about 2 years after we were married. He got out about I think 3 months before my first daughter was born. 47. But see, before he got out, you know, I told you we adopted those little twin girls.
Oh, right.
They're my oldest daughters. But their mother was a cousin of mine, and she was married to a sailor.
Mm-hmm.
And she was killed in a car accident. The two of them were, I don't know, she used to drink a lot. And I guess she was on leave or something. So these two little girls were about 4 months old.
Yeah.
So I took them, you know.
And you were living by yourself at this time?
Mm-hmm.
It was in this 2 year period of?
Yeah. Well, I took them at first because they were going to put them in a foster home and all this. And I had to really talk to get them because the Children's Welfare Bureau wasn't going to let me take them because they said I didn't have a job and I didn't have a home of my own and give me all this, you know.
Mm.
And the only thing I had going for me was that I was a relative and that they were part Indian and that it was just right that they should go in to a home.
Mm-hmm.
And I even threatened them that I was going to take it to court and all. I didn't even know what
what you did.
If they had taken it in
convincing.
Oh, my daughter says I can really talk. Like I have this paper I'm supposed to hand in today. I was working on it yesterday. Well, she came over. She said, hey, she says, I've got to go over to a Eastland Shopping Center. You want to go with me? Okay, so I just closed my and I went to coffee, but she said, oh, Mom, she said, are your paper nearly finished? She said, and I said, no. And she said, what are you going to do? And I said, well, I'll sit up all night long. I said, type until I get sleepy. And possibly, I said, I'll miss my first two classes. I will get it in. So I got home there and I cooked dinner for my son. Well, after that, I could see my typing. I was sitting there. And I was just thinking and thinking, you know. So I told her, I said, oh, you know, I talked to her, the teacher, and he told me that if I got both of my papers in on the last day of class, he'd accept them. And she says, smile. She says, I knew you had a loophole somewhere. I knew you wouldn't have your papers in. But I'm not with I can. My other daughter called me and she says, boy, Mom, she said, I don't know what you're getting your degree in. She said, when you finish there. But she said, I bet you there will be nobody in this world that can make up little white lies like you. Yeah, I've learned that.
Right. Well, okay, you had the two little girls, and then your husband got out of the service.
Mm-hmm.
And then, now, where did you two go together?
When he first got out, we took our two little girls and we went back to Indiana. That's where his mother and father lived. So we stayed with her for a while. And then she had a little, it used to seem strange to me because my husband had this, I guess it's people come from Indiana or something. They say a lot of words that are different. It's just like you would think about, so the hillbillies have the language of their own. Like he would, if he said he hid something, he would say, I stashed it away, you know. And for the longest time, I couldn't get used to that. So he used to say the ice cream parlor. He meant like a soda fountain, you know. And he'd say, well, he says, my mom wants to sell ice cream parlor. And to me, a parlor was like, you know, a living room, you know. And I used to think, you know, for the longest time, business she had was in Columbus, Ohio. And I hadn't seen it, so I used to wonder, what kind of a place is this? So that's what she did. She sold her little ice cream parlor. So we all came back out here again.
His mother came with you. Now, did you have your third child? Did you have your daughter by this time?
Yeah, she was born out there.
So when you went there, you were pregnant?
Mm-hmm. And, but she had been out here to visit when we first got married. You told her about it. Right away, she came out here to see.
To see you.
Yeah.
Make sure you were okay.
Well, the only comment she had is, I was too skinny. She ought to see me now. She just loved me now. But we came back out here. She bought a home out here in law. Oh, that's another thing I used to laugh about because I didn't know the difference, you know. I didn't know that L.A. was so, you know, there were boundaries and all that. Well, she bought this home out on, what is that street? Doheny? Well, I didn't know this thing was yours. All I knew was it was a beautiful home, you know, had upstairs and it looked, you know, real big. And, but we didn't stay out there with her, you know, we wanted our own place. And we didn't have too much money, so my husband, he was like I was too, you know, he'd get a job and then he wasn't satisfied with it, so he would quit and then before you knew it, he had something else and he was just kind of going from job to job. And so we were just sort of living from week to week, you know.
And you weren't working either?
Not by then, I had quit working altogether because I found out that it was costing me money to have a babysitter for my three little ones. And then another thing, I couldn't be satisfied with anybody, you know, taking care of them. I don't know, I guess I had my own way of how I wanted my kids raised.
Well, do you think any of it stemmed from just the society at the time was really pressuring women to be good mothers and that was more important than...
Well, and not
working there.
I didn't know too much about that. Like, I never paid much attention. But my ideas about raising kids was what my grandmother had taught me.
So you were raising them in an Indian way then?
At this time?
Mm-hmm. Well, what did your husband think about that?
He thought it was just wonderful because he found out that I didn't have to really yell at them and punish them, you know. I would just kind of talk to them and it seemed like they understood, you know, and they would just do everything the way I wanted them to do. And a lot of times I didn't have to tell them, I want you to do this, you know. But I would come in a roundabout way, you know.
Yeah.
And they would do it without, you know, if I had said, you know, I want you to do this, you know, that kids would rebel, you know. But
it sounds like you've always maintained your culture then. You've always had that, and you've raised your kids with that attitude.
I was raised like that, so I just couldn't get away from it. And I told my husband, and he says, well, that's a good idea. He says, I don't mind. He says, you know. He says, we're not going to fight about it. He said. So I told him, I said, a little compromise. I said, you can, if your mother wants to teach him some Italian or something, I said, to go right ahead.
Mm-hmm.
So my kids learned a little bit. They didn't know her too much. Like, it's the oldest one. Like my youngest son, he wasn't born yet. I think she died when the oldest of my boys was born. So he doesn't really know her. It's just a girl to him.
Mm-hmm.
So she used to teach him a little bit of Italian.
And when they would see your parents, your family, did they see your family at all and get that?
Yeah, my dad is gone now. My boys didn't know my dad either because he died before they were. So it's my girls that are the only ones that met their own. But now my boys, they go back there like every summer. They visit their grandmother.
You have, what, 5 girls and 2 boys or 4 girls?
4 girls and I have 3 boys.
Hmm. You were speaking about the house in Doheny and how.
Yeah, when I never thought about it, but somebody told me one time, you know, I said I was going to take the kids to visit their grandmother. We were living in East LA, that's what it was. And here we're living in this little old dumpy house. I said, I have to take the kids, you know, all the way up to, I go up Pico Boulevard, I said. But in those days, they didn't have all these freeways, you know.
Right.
So I said, I go all the way up Pico, and then I turn up on, near Robertson. So somebody says, that's Beverly Hills. What are you doing in Beverly Hills? I said, well, that's where their grandmother lives. They looked at me. Well, how come you're living down here, you know? And that's when I found out, you know, what they thought about me. Mm-hmm. And to me, it just seemed, you know, I didn't even realize it. And I told my husband, I said, I knew your mother was living in Beverly Hills. He said, what's wrong with that? And I said, well, she must be kind of a snob. And he says, oh, he says, you met my mother.
You know, she didn't do that. Well, at the time then, when your husband's still looking for work, and you're living in East LA, and you've got three children now.
Mm-hmm.
How are you feeling about just doing all that, being at home and being a housewife? And
I found there a lot of things to keep me busy.
I mean, it just seems like such a
difference from what you have, you know. Oh, it was a different kind of a life experience. I was trying to, I started up the Girl Scout troop, and that went under because I didn't realize that in a Mexican neighborhood, they sort of stick together, you know. And once they found out I wasn't Mexican, I was sort of on the outside.
Hmm.
So What I needed was a lot of cooperation from the parents, which I didn't get. And these poor little kids wanted to be Ghostbusters. I think I was going out of my way to do everything to get them, you know. And the only one that gave me a lot of help was this guy. Well, he wasn't Mexican, he was Spanish. He came from, he was one of these, I've heard about them, bats from Spain. And he was pretty friendly, you know. And he was the Boy Scout, Scout Masters. And so he had these troops, you know, and they were always into something. And these boys all had their uniforms. So he would come over and tell me, you know, things, you know, to help my little Girl Scouts and the things that I could do. And when they got Christmas time, see, they had a Christmas party for the Boy Scouts. He invited my little, I had the Girl Scouts and I had our little brownie troop, you know. So they got to go there and they had presents for them and everything, which I was so happy about because, you know, but the parents, they just, you know, sure, you know, they would send, you know, their little 50 cents that they were supposed to remember. And I would send them, you know, the hours of their meeting or something was going on. Well, they would bring them. That was about it. They never really came in and asked me, you know, if there's anything I can do to help. And I was always asking them, inviting them, you know. Well, it was a disaster. And then another thing was, this is so stupid, I think. Because it's Alex, that was that scoutmaster. See, they had a community organization. And he was a president. So they were always, you know, meeting to better things, you know, in a community. Like they were trying to get the RTD. That time it used to be these, they had these streetcars.
The red cars?
No, they were yellow cars, but they ran on a trolley, or the tracks, you know. But they were trying to get them to run an extra line through summers anyway, so they were writing letters and all. Well, he said they needed a secretary. So one day he told me, you know, he says, you can type, can't you? And I said, yeah. I said, well, I don't have a typewriter. Oh, he says, I'll bring mine over there. And he said, you can use it. So they made me secretary. But there, I had to go to those meetings. And then it ended up that a lot of these Mexican women, they started talking. They said, you know that Mr. Vitor Azaga, he sure likes some, that Mrs. Storm. Something must be going on between those two. When I heard about it, I couldn't believe it. You know, it's just like she was saying up there about sexism, that you can't be friends with a guy right away, they, you know. And that's what happens, you know. So I felt kind of bad about it. And I told my husband laughed, and he says, well, as long as you know I trust you, he said, and I know there's nothing going on. And then he teased me, and I said, or is there, you know, he's kind of, you know, I said, maybe I should come to the meetings with you and all that. So I told him finally that I said, it's just too much, and I said, I think I'll just give it all up. So that's when he says, well, I was thinking about moving anyway, he said. So that's when we started talking about, it seemed like we were stuck out here, so he started talking, well, by this time he'd been, see, he started working with American Can Company. Mm-hmm. Well, we had gone back to Indiana. In the meantime, too, we were just going. So when we were back there, see, he got a job in Ohio with the American Can Company. So somehow or other, he talked them into giving him a transfer to the plant out here. So we came back out here again, and that's when, well, by this time, I had all my kids, my boys and everything.
Oh, this is a lot later.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Well, like during the 50s, you had all the kids were born by then?
Oh, yeah. I have, like, I have a son that was born in 1950, and my daughter was born in 1950. She was born in 1950. He was born in 1951. Those two are close together. All the others are sort of like two years apart. But see, my last one was, he was born in 1950. Let's see, he's 23. 56.
So you had gone down to Ohio, and then you came back. How long were you in Ohio?
Oh, I guess about 5 or 6 years.
Oh, you were. Mm-hmm. And you're, like, I don't know, I'm really wondering about your own culture yourself and how that was maintained in the home, and, you know, what your home was like.
It was just a mixture, I guess. We did what we thought made us happy, I guess. Like we used to, we were always kidding around. Like when we first, when we came back out here, the kids were pretty big by then, you know. And we used to kid around about dinner in the evening, you know. And they'd say, what kind of dinner are we going to have tonight, you know? And so we'd say, oh, we're going to have a Mexican dinner tonight. You know, so I'd make enchiladas, or we'd have tacos or something. And I said, tonight's going to be a German dinner. So we'd have Polish sausage and sauerkraut and all this stuff. You know. So we just, you know, kind of, everybody sort of accepted everything. You know. Mm-hmm. Like my oldest son was going with a little Japanese girl in high school. And, I guess it wasn't that serious because they're still good friends. Sometimes he talks to her. They sort of keep in touch, and he always tells me, oh, I saw so-and-so today. He always says, you know, something. But anyway, he was going with this girl, and well, his sisters, right away, they start telling me, oh, Mom, I think he's going to marry her. It's getting serious. So my youngest daughter, Laura, you know, she's the one that's just a year older than he is, and she's the one that's always teasing. Well, she's kind of on a chubby side, you know, and he's always teasing her about, you know, her weight, you know, and she gets all angry sometimes about it. And so they were looking at TV, so they were showing a Japanese family or something. They sat on these pillows on the floor, and so Laura comes out with him. She says, see, Mama, she said, when Vandy marries that girl, we go to visit them. She said, we're going to sit on these cushions. You see. And Vandy was just sitting there. He looks at her and he says, yeah. And he said, I must remember to tell her to make an extra big one for Laura. He got back at her like that, you know.
Well, what did you think about, I don't know, just what was going on in the country at the time during the 50s? Sort of the, you know, after the war especially, and people doing without a lot. And then all of a sudden, a lot of consumerism started, you know, just that.
I don't know. To me, I still say that we were better off then, I think. Because my husband, when he first started American Can, his paycheck was only about $58 a week. Mm-hmm. And it seemed like I could do so much with that. You know, it bought so many things.
Did you have most of the things in the home? Yes.
Oh!
You know, it seemed that they pushed a lot of those kind of products, you know, to buy this and buy that.
Yeah, because, like, during the World War II, they needed all the metal for the army and all, or the war. So they didn't manufacture like cars and refrigerators and washing machines and stuff. So all of a sudden, you know, the market is flooding.
Oh, yeah.
And everybody's pushing up. And then TVs first came out too, they were pushing them. So it seemed like a rat race to me because everybody, you know, they thought it was like a status thing, you know. The first thing, you know, you go, you have some friends, you know. Oh, you're going to have to come over and see our new furniture. Oh, you know, they'd be talking about their husband. He bought me a brand new refrigerator, you know. And I was kind of, you know, because I always thought we buy these things because we need them, you know. Like, I wanted to get beds for my kids, you know, because I wanted them to sleep comfortable. And then I knew I needed a stove to cook on and a refrigerator to keep things clean, you know, or my food out of school. But then a washing machine didn't seem that important to me, because I always figured I could wash clothes by hand. And now that's what we did, because my husband and I, we just lived in an apartment, so we didn't have a washing machine. But these twins, you know, and then there was those days they didn't have Pampers.
Mm-hmm.
So we had stacks of cloth diapers. He and I used to take turns washing those diapers.
Mm-hmm.
And we made a little game of it, because, you know, he'd say, oh, look at my diapers on the line. They look so white, you know. He said, yours look kind of dingy, so I try. It's all scrub work, you know, I just scrub it. So it didn't bother us, which one did it, you know, it was kind of a... So it wasn't till, I think after my kids were already in school, when I finally got a washing machine.
Oh my goodness. Wait, did you work at all?
Oh, yeah, and when they all started to school, I went and got a job. Oh, it was because I knew this guy that, he used to be in the, like I talked about the BIA, the Bureau of Indian Affairs. So they had the federal building downtown. It used to be on Broadway that time, way down there on 10th and Broadway, I think it was the federal building. And he told me that I could go up there and get a job in the office. So I thought, you know, it sounds good, you know, because it was getting so I run out of things at home to do, I guess. So I went down and got a job. So I worked for about a year, I guess. But then in the meantime, my kids were having problems in school, you know, because it just seemed like it was about like the same problem I had, you know. People would think they were Mexicans, you know. Sure. When they find out that they don't speak Spanish, well, the teachers would kind of ignore them, you know. And then they would come home and tell me, you know, well, the teacher didn't, you know, so I'd have to go up to a school, you know. I think I was going back and forth, you know. It's like my son was going to Garfield. And so that's, you know, we had bought our home and everything, you know. And we moved out to Whittier.